Shavua Tov, this is a summary from our Gemara Shir on Shabbos Parashas Ki Teitze. We began in Ksuvos Yud Amud Beis 10b, if I remember correctly, it was about 8-10 lines up from the bottom, for Amar of Chana Bagadata. Yep, about 8-10 lines up from the bottom. You recall that the Gemara was picking up, was in the middle of a language discussion. It had started out with a discussion of the word almana and the origin of the word almana, and is it connected to mana, which is the ksuba of an almana. And Rav Chana of Baghdad was the one who discussed almana, and he continues with other language points. So we talked about the word mizbeach and the word matar, and how those convey the words themselves convey messages regarding the items that they describe, rain and the altar in the Beis HaMikdash. And now Rav Chana Bagadata is talking about dates. He's now really off of wordplay, and he's just talking about dates. And he said, Tamri Mashchanon or Mashachnon, that dates heat up the body, they satiate, Mishalshalon, they are a laxative, Ma'ashran, they strengthen the body, V'lomafankon, and they don't make the person a mefunak, they don't make the person dainty and delicate and pampered such that they won't eat other things. And all of these are considered positives. The laxative is a positive as well. The medicine of the Gemara's time, frankly the Rambam's medicine as well, Galen's medicine, put a heavy emphasis on digestion and its importance for various areas of human health, something that actually has come back into vogue with discussions of the microbiome. But in any case, he says, dates have all of these wonderful salutary effects on the body. Then we continue, Va'omar Rav. Rav also tells us about dates. Achal tamarim mal yoreh. If you eat dates, you should not paskin. Don't paskin halacha. They apparently they have some kind of an intoxicating effect. Tosfos here notes a problem. He quotes you the Gemara in Krisus Yud Gimel Amud Beis, which I put on the source sheet, in which we find a machlokes tanoim regarding the pasuk Yain v'shechar al teisht. The Torah says, Parsha Shmini, that when you're going to enter the Beis HaMikdash, you can't drink yayin v'sheichar. So yayin we know is wine. The word sheichar sounds like it means intoxicating beverages, potentially other than wine. So we get three different views from the Tanaim regarding how to parse yayin v'sheichar. First view says that the goal of v'sheichar is to teach me, it's Krisus Yud Gimel Amud Beis, that the goal of the word v'sheichar is to teach me that wine is only going to prevent you from entering the Beis HaMikdash in the event that you have kedei l'shacher, if you have enough wine to cause you to be intoxicated. If a person has a tiny amount of wine, less than a revius of wine, that's not going to make him intoxicated, and he can enter the Beis HaMikdash. So the word v'sheichar does not mean other intoxicating beverages. It just means that wine only bars you from the Beis HaMikdash if it would actually intoxicate. Then you get Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says no. He says, sheichar means sha'ar m'shachrin, other things that would in fact intoxicate a person. And then you have Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer says, no, that's not what v'sheichar means. V'sheichar means derech shichruso, if you drink wine in a way that intoxicates, as opposed to if you dilute it with water, as opposed to if you drink it with pauses in between, when he says that it will not intoxicate. So, this Brisa in Krisus Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis talks about entering the Beis HaMikdash after drinking wine or other intoxicating beverages, and only Rabbi Yehuda says that other intoxicating beverages are a problem. Is Rabbi Eliezer, and the first view of the Tanakhama, would say other intoxicating things do not keep a person out of the Beis HaMikdash. So Tosfos asks, I don't understand. If intoxicating things that are other than wine don't keep you out of the Beis HaMikdash, why should they keep you from paskening? That's the question that Tosfos asks. So Tosfos, in our Gemara, answers that the Beis HaMikdash is different from Psak. He says, for the Beis HaMikdash, it's a Gzeres HaKasov, it's a decree, only wine keeps you out of the Beis HaMikdash. Whereas, if you're talking about paskening, any intoxicant is enough to prohibit. Tosus and Krisus, Yud Gimel Amud Beis, gives a different answer, and says that Krisus, that Gemara there, was talking about the words Yayin V'Sheichar specifically. those words, the De'oraisa, the biblical prohibition, may only refer to wine. Here, though, we're talking about midirabanan. We're talking about on the rabbinic level. We talk about on the rabbinic level, indeed, all intoxicants would keep you out of the Beis HaMikdash, and all intoxicants would keep you from paskening. Okay. Bottom line is, Rav says no paskening after eating dates. That's the rule. So the Gemara challenges and says, wait a minute. We have a brisa that's going to praise their salutary effects. Take a look at this brisa. Meisvei. Tamarim shachris va'arvis yafos. Dates are considered to be good for you in the morning. They're considered to be good for you in the incha ra'os. In the afternoon, they're bad for you. But saharayim, middle of the day, ain kimo sun. There's nothing as good as they are. And Rashi notes that's talking about middle of the day after lunch, eating them right after you eat lunch. Nothing is as good as they are. They are awesome for you, even better than morning and evening. Umavatlo shlosha devarim. They help you to avoid three things. Machshava ra'a, which Rashi renders as da'aga, worry, anxiety. They keep anxiety away. V'choli me'ayim. They also avoid intestinal problems. V'tachtonios, and bowel issues. So you're telling me that the dates are so wonderful for you. How can you tell me that they prevent you from paskening? To which the Gemara gives you the relatively obvious answer. The mi amrina de lo malu, who said they're not good for you? Aluya mali, they're wonderful. However, lefishaita tirda, at the moment that you actually eat them, they also will cause you distraction. Midi da havia chamra, like wine does also. Damar mara shows the revias yayin al yora. We also say that if you drink a revias of wine, a few ounces of wine, you're not supposed to paskin. It doesn't mean wine doesn't have salutary effects. It means that it also can distract you. So our first answer is, yes, it's good for you. And yes, it also distracts the mind. Second answer is, it depends on when you eat the dates. That's the alternative approach. If you want to give you a different answer, it's no problem. Hamekami nahama, halabasar nahama. Depends on whether you're having the dates before you eat bread or after you've already had bread. Da'amar Abaye, Abaye said, Amra li aim. Literally, my mother said to me, alternatively, Amra li aim, which Abaye brings quite a few times in the Gemara, is a reference to a nanny who raised him. Tamri mikame nama kinarga ledikula. If you eat dates before you have bread, oh, is that bad for you? It's like a hatchet cutting down a palm tree. Basar nama, after you have bread, ki avra ledasha. It's like a bolt strengthening and reinforcing the door. So we're getting a lot of advice here about eating dates. And keep in mind that, and we discussed this at greater length in the shiur, that the Gemara is filled with medical advice. The Gemara considers that a religious responsibility to teach medical advice. So that's consistent with this here as well. There's a lot more to be said about it, but right now we're going to go forward in the Gemara. So the Gemara now concludes the wordplay piece by giving us Hebrew and Aramaic links, Aramaic words, which fit with which seems to be some kind of a contraction of a Hebrew word. The point is to show, the Marsha and the Gemara in Shabbos, Ayin Zayin Amud Beis says this, the point is to show that Aramaic stems from Hebrew. When I studied Arabic at YU, so the professor suggested that in the family of languages, Aramaic is kind of a descendant of Hebrew and Arabic. So, dasha, the word dasha, which happens to be the last word that we read right before this, we're now one line up from the bottom. Dasha means door. So, Amar Rava, Rava says, derech sham. The Hebrew word, derech sham. There is a path through there. The road goes through there. Go through that door. Darga is Aramaic for ladder. So, Amar Rava, derech gag. The route to the roof is darga, ladder. Purya. Kurya is Aramaic for bed. So Amar of Papa, Sheparin V'Ravin Aleha, because reproduction, procreation takes place there. Parin V'Ravin is Purya. So we're using Hebrew words to explain Aramaic words. And one more, Amar of Nachum Bar Yitzhak. Rav Nachum Bar Yitzhak jumps on board. Af Anu Nomar, we will also say the word Ilonis. The word Ilonis is an Aramaic word referring to a woman who's not able to have children. So Ilonis is from the word Ayil. Ayil is a ram. Is another way to say it. Ayil is called dechar in Aramaic. And it also means male. Dechar is zachar. Delo Yalda, because she's not able to produce children. So you get this link that Ayil Duchra, we're linking the Hebrew and the Aramaic. That's what the Gemara is doing here, concluding our word discussion and bringing us back to our Masechta. So we're up to the Mishnah at the top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, and remember that our discussion before we got off onto funny words was about ksuba of a besula. So normally, woman approaches to get married. The assumption is that she's a besula. However, sometimes something can happen that might cause us to think that she might not be a besula. There was an event in her history that caused us to question whether she would really be a besula. And that event is essentially what's called a reyusa. There's a chazaka. Chazaka is a presumed status. And a reyusa is something that takes place that undermines the presumed status. And we have three cases here that might undermine the presumed status. The first is if she wasn't Jewish at some point. She was a Gioras, she converted to Judaism. So since there was a period of time when she wasn't Jewish, we don't know what she was involved with and what she was engaged in, and it's possible that something happened such that she's no longer a Basula. That's number one. Number two, we talk about a Shavuya, a woman who had been taken captive, held for ransom, and again, the question is, what happened while she was being held for ransom? And then the third is a Shivcha. She was not Jewish, and then she became a maidservant. And again, the question of what might have happened during that period of time. So, all three of those circumstances can undermine the presumption that she is a Besula. But there's a twist here. And the twist here is that those three circumstances happened when she was under the age of three. So look at the Mishnah. Hagiores v'hashvuya v'hashivcha, a woman who converted to Judaism or was held for ransom or taken captive at any rate, and a woman who was a shivcha, shenifdu, v'shenizgayru, v'shenishtacharu, who was redeemed, talk about the shivuya, the captive, v'shenizgayru, converted to Judaism, nishtacharu, was freed from slavery, p'chusos mibino shaloshanim v'yom echad, when she was under the age of 3 years and a day. So all these circumstances ended before she turned three. So the rule is, ksuba san masayim, the ksuba is 200. We treat them as a full besula. V'yeshlen tanas besulim. And since the assumption is that she's a besula, if the man marries her and finds there are no besulim, so he's able to claim, hey, wait a minute, I was given reason to think she was a basula, and she's not a basula, and now he can claim there was some element of fraud involved. So why? What's this 3 year thing? What is this magic 3 year thing? So the Gemara in Nidadaf Mem Hei Amid Aleph explains a Mishnah there to make the following biologically questionable statement: that basulim will return in the event that penetration takes place before the age of three. The language of the Mishnah there, it's like putting a finger into an eye. So the go back to something we've said in previous weeks. The tube there inside the woman when she is a fetus is filled with tissue. By the time that she's born and starts to emerge out into the world, that tissue disintegrates. All that's generally left, maximum, is a membrane of tissue at the entrance. And that's what becomes known as the hymen, as the basulum. I know of no reason why, if that hymen is penetrated, it should ever regrow. There's no suggestion biologically that tissue should come back, should regenerate. This is very hard to understand. Why is it that if something happens before the age of three, we would say the basulum would come back? It's very strange. Frankly, if I didn't have the Gemara Nida, the Mishnah Nida, I would have assumed that the reason why, if these things happen before the age of three, we treat her as a basula, is because what kind of lunatic would have done something if she's not yet 3 years old? Do you really have to make an assumption that something would have happened with this, pre-3 years old child? I mean, you can tell me that there are, unfortunately, in this world, people who really are that out of their mind. That may be. But it's not common. Not common enough to think that something actually would have happened, that we should question her status as a basula. That's just bizarre. But that's not what the Mishnah and the Gemara say. They say it's that the Basulim are going to come back. I did see one article which quoted a Rav Yehuda Leib Shwadron to explain, based on the term that the Mishnah used. The Mishnah said it's like putting a finger in the eye. So he said, just like the eye is resilient, if something is poked into the eye bounces back, so too, before the age of 3, the Basulim will not be torn. They have a certain flexibility to them. It's an interesting idea. I'm not sure it actually fits with the Gemara in Ida. It fits the metaphor with the eye. I'm not sure it fits the Gemara in Ida so well. Nonetheless, our Mishnah says that you can assume they are a Basula if they were converted when they were under 3, if they were freed when they were under 3, and so on. So the Gemara now picks up on the case of the convert, the Gioris. And what it's going to do here on this page makes this page perhaps the most important page in Shas regarding conversion of a minor. That's not really a Ksuvos topic, but it comes from the fact that we just mentioned somebody converting to Judaism before the age of 3. And you have to ask yourself, how in the world did that happen? How does someone convert to Judaism before the age of 3? So look at the opening line in the Gemara on the Mishnah, on the fifth line on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph on 11a. Amar Rav Huna, Ger Katan Matbilin Oso Al Das Bezdin. If somebody converts as a minor, we immerse them in the mikvah. Aldas Bezdin, the Bezdin is the one that provides the consent on their behalf. Meaning, as the Ritva explains, a minor does not have the ability to consent. So Bezdin substitutes their own consent as though they were the ones who are converting. Ah, where are the parents? So we'll come back to that, God willing, in next week's shir. But we do, I did want to note a couple of things here. One thing specifically here. And that is Rav Huna's language. Rav Huna says that you're able to convert a minor with the Beis Din's consent, but he doesn't use the word convert. He says matbilin, we immerse them. Now, there are 3 stages to conversion, right? There is bris milah for a male. Well, there are 4 technically. There's the karban that is brought after the conversion, which is not relevant without a Beis HaMikdash. But even without a Beis HaMikdash, we have 3. We have Bris Milah for males, then you have Kabbalas Mitzvos, accepting the mitzvahs, and you have Tevilah, you have immersion. So why does Rav Huna mention immersion specifically? So the Rishonim give a few different answers. The Ran, first of all, offers, because, and this is the logical answer, immersion applies to girls as well. So you'd rather bring something that's relevant for males and females. The Ran also suggests it's because immersion completes the conversion. You know, the way we do it is the bris milah is first. They go into the mikvah. In the mikvah, they re-accept that they're going to do the mitzvos, and then they come out of the mikvah, and there may be a new dip. But that, the immersion, is what completes the conversion. Okay. The Ritva gives an interesting answer. The Ritva says the principle that we're going to be operating under that's going to allow the Beis Din to give consent on behalf of the child is the principle of Zachen La'adam Shalo B'fanav. You can acquire merit for somebody without their presence, without them even being there. So you can say that Beis Din is accepting on behalf of the child when it comes to immersion, because immersion is clearly a benefit. As opposed to circumcision, well, you know, that's a painful experience. I'm not so sure that that's meritorious. Ritva says that's why he says Tevila specifically. I'm not really clear on that, because if that's really true, if you really have a concern that bris milah is not considered to be a benefit, then that undermines potentially the whole idea of consenting on their behalf. So I don't really understand the Ritva. But the Rashba gives us what I really like as an answer. He says, bris milah makes sense, that the child can undergo bris milah as a minor, the Beis Din can accept it for them. And when they become an adult, they're still circumcised, and therefore the consent still works. The bris milah is ongoing, so to speak. They are in a circumcised state. However, immersion, he says, is a greater novelty, because they immersed when they were 2 years old. They immersed when they were 7 years old. Whatever it is, the immersion is long gone by the time they turn 12 or 13. Right? The immersion isn't happening right now. So I would have thought that a new immersion would be required with their own intent, with their own consent. The only immersion that ever happened was what happened long ago. It's long gone. So I think you'd immersion. So Rav Huna is trying to teach me that we don't require a brand new immersion, and that's a greater novelty than the fact that we don't require a brand new bris milah. There's much more to be said. We have to talk about the parents. We have to talk about how you're teaching this kid mitzvos. So God willing, we'll come back to that next week.